Hello and welcome to another episode of MetaSci Kicks. My name is Liv and this is the podcast where we talk about all things metaphysical, spiritual, paranormal, and in between. Today, inspired by our last episodes revolving around the goddess Hecate, we are going to be focusing on a story in which the Titan goddess herself is referenced in, because there's not a lot of them. And I picked this one specifically because I kind of think it's a little timely, and it can personally relate to it as well. I didn't realize the timeliness of it now that it's going to be almost February and the end of January, etc., until I started researching it, and I was like, this is uncanny from the uncanny goddess. Anyways, we're going to be focusing on specifically the Homeric hymn to Demeter, aka the abduction of Persephone by Hades. So I'm excited about it. Are you guys excited about it? Let me know. Thank you. So specifically, I want to talk about, like I said, the Homeric hymn to Demeter, based presumably off of Hesiod's Theogony, where Hades asks Zeus for a wife. And Zeus is like, hey, dude, you can just marry my daughter, aka Persephone, which has caused a lot of turmoil in recent times. Again, we talked about in, I want to say, episode 191. Hecate is very much a pop culture icon goddess of these days, if you will. And Persephone and Hades is also becoming that. I would say more so Persephone's, but I mean, Hades is too. But their story together evokes a lot of conflicting feelings from a lot of people. So today, in honor of Hecate being mentioned in this story, we're going to talk about the things that can be digested, learned from, the perspectives given, the wisdom hashed out from Homer's hymn to Demeter. Now, before we get into this, I'm going to give you all a life update. It's not very long. If you don't want to listen about me personally as a human being and the things that go through my head outside of spirituality all the time, or just things that aren't related to this podcast specifically, then you can click past this portion of the podcast by going down into the show notes or the description below if you're listening on the Metapsychics Extras YouTube channel and not Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Just, you know, switch through this little time point and you can go to the beginning of the podcast and its contents. Other than that, this is what's been on my mind. So my husband and I have been trying to ask each other, I guess, not necessarily how our day has been. It's been brought to my attention by my husband, I should say, that when he comes home from work and I go, oh, honey, how's your day been? It makes him really, really angry because he doesn't want to talk about his day. He's stressed out. He's a car mechanic. He works with a lot of people and tries to also ensure a lot of people's safety, where maybe sometimes people are like, I don't care about my safety because I'd rather save money. And then that just makes him morally upset, you know, things like that. So he's like, I really don't like when you ask me how my day was, because my day's usually poop. And I don't want to talk about things that are related to work. So instead of asking each other how our days have been, or quote, how work was, we've been trying to ask each other, what is one thing that we learned each day? Which is a lot. I don't know. I guess when you phrase things differently, it can just light up different areas of your brain and it goes, ooh, I don't feel so feisty to answer that. You know, like you already thought you wanted to wash the dishes, but as soon as someone asks you to wash the dishes, you're like, welp, that whole thing's going out the window. I don't want to do the dishes anymore. It's the same thing of like, maybe I wanted to share something about my day, but now that you asked me how my day was, I don't want to talk about it because that just lights up the wrong areas of the brain. So I think my husband asking me what was something that I learned this week is going to hopefully help me to reiterate the story of the abduction of Persephone to you all today, because I've been trying to get it right and I have like two pages of the notes of all of it, but I think I'm going to try to just say it from my brain instead of stammering over notes. But that's something I talked to my husband about this week and he's like, wow, I didn't know any of that. And I was like, me neither. But the thing that he shared with me that I've been sort of mulling around in my mind is the word humility, right? My husband does not, or has a limited like inner monologue. So he doesn't hear his own voice in his head as much as maybe all of us do, because I have a rampant inner monologue, right? All the time, 24/7. So for him, reading is hard. So he's been listening to a lot of audiobooks and podcasts and things about different topics that he's trying to use to give him new perspectives on the world, you know, gumption, insight, optimism, whatever. As, you know, new parents kind of do. Everything switches. Everything's been changing a lot since we've become parents. And it's almost like we're trying to embrace our new identities, blend it in with who we are and who we still are, but added to who we're becoming. So anyways, he said that he didn't really know the word humility. So he looked it up, and he's been trying to add more words to his vocabulary every week, every month, which with whatever that's going on. So he's like, if I'm listening to something and I don't know a word and I don't seem to understand it in the context of how it's being used in the sentence, he's like, I've been trying to make a point to look up the words. And he said that he looked up the word humility for the definition on like a quick Google search. And then he said the thing that really stuck out to him, not the fact that humility means or is associated with the word humble, but he said that humility, when looking on his Google search, like the use of the word throughout history, it peaked in like the 1800s. And then the use of that word dramatically plummeted and then brought a little bit up, like just a squoosh, if you will, in like 2019. And since then, it has not even reached, I mean, it's above its plateau point, but the use of humility has dramatically plummeted since 1800s. And he's like, I don't know. I think that that little graph, that little line graph right there says a lot about society today as a whole. Now, if you don't know what the word humility means, let me tell you for you. Humility, from the Oxford Dictionary definition on a quick googly search, says a modest or low view of one's own importance, i.e. humbleness. So I don't know. I think that's interesting. It was super popular, like I said, in the 1800s, and around the 1900s, its use dramatically plummeted. And now since 2019, it started to go up just a little bit. But I don't know. When he said that, I was like, that's an interesting observation. And that's one of the things that he learned this week. And I've found myself since then, because that was like Monday, Tuesday, if you will, I've found certain parts of my day throughout work and then just normal existence where stopping and asking myself, can I be more humble in this situation? I've been adapting that to my life in the last week, or being more conscientious of it. Does that make sense? Like that thought is consciously crossing my mind and I'm trying to implement, okay, how can I extend the olive branch in this situation? How can I be more humble in this situation, this encounter? And I don't know, it's just something that I figured I would share with you all, because it's just something that's been on my mind. Anyways, that's mostly my life update for this week, besides the unadulterated pleasure that I get from seeing my child have a cookie in his hand. Is that a silly thing to say? Like, I never thought that when I would have a baby, that one of the single most things that brings joy to me is giving him an Oreo cookie and just watching how excited he is to enjoy that cookie, whether it be trying to share it with the dog, banging it on the table, breaking it in half, and then licking out the insides and then eating everything else. The sight of giving your child a cookie and watching them enjoy it, it brings me so much joy. That's the only other thing that I really have to say this week. So let's not waste any more time. Let's talk about one of the stories in which Hecate is featured, which is the Hymn to Demeter written by Homer. All right, guys. So, knocking everything down. Like I said, what we're going to be focusing on today is the Homeric Hymn to Demeter, aka the Abduction of Persephone by Hades, which is based presumably off of Hesiod's Theogony, where in the Theogony, Hades, the god of the underworld, asks Zeus, his brother, the god of the heavens and thunderbolts, whatever, for a wife, and Zeus literally says to his brother, okay, you can marry my daughter Persephone. So, I wrote in my notes, please don't come for me, because I know there is a more modern group of Persephone and Hades lovers, haters. I'm not sure. I just know that from an old TikTok where I presumed I was channeling the energy of Persephone, I said something along the lines of how Persephone and Hades have a good relationship. It's loving, something like that. I should have probably went and watched, like rewatched that TikTok, but I didn't. I just remember the comments that I got where there was a lot of people that were upset that I said that Persephone could have positive feelings for Hades, which I totally understand because the people in that subset of ways to interpret this story feel that it is very much like a feminist story where Persephone's rights were taken away. She was abducted by Hades against her will, et cetera, et cetera. It's just a more literal interpretation of the hymn to Demeter itself, which is entirely acceptable and very much okay, because as we're going to talk about today, there are a lot of different ways to interpret this story that is a more modern interpretation of this hymn. However, we're going to be focusing more on this podcast, the Hellenistic research and understandings and the opinions that I have too of the Homeric Hymn to Demeter, which is important to mention that there are other stories or retellings of this abduction of Persephone. One of them is by Ovid. However, I am not going to talk about that one because it differs in the details of the story. And when you think about the Hellenistic idea or interpretation of the hymn to Demeter or the abduction of Persephone by Hades, Ovid came way later than Homer and Hesiod. Hesiod literally wrote the Theogony, which is the creation story of all of the Greek pantheon, if you will. And this was written along with Homer's hymn to Demeter in the 8th century BC, whereas Ovid didn't come until Roman times, which is a lot later. That was like 1st century, I think, CE? Or was that when the Roman guy exiled him? I have it written here in the notes somewhere, but that's just my basis for why we are going to focus on the Homer hymn to Demeter and not necessarily Ovid or any other sort of delineation of the story. Now, the root myth interpretation for this story is for the changing of the seasons, but I think more can be drawn from this story, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So before we get into all of those opinions and wisdom and different ways to look at the story and how to interpret it, not necessarily maybe so literally and more as mythology should be interpreted, which is symbolically with its allegory, we should talk about the story itself first. Oh, there are my notes. Okay, specifically, both Greek poets of Homer and Hesiod are from the 8th century BCE, so Greek Hellenistic times. However, Ovid, who has his own story or his own version of the abduction of Persephone by Hades, Ovid was exiled from Rome in the 1st century CE because he is notoriously known as a horny old goat. Take that as nicely as you will, because I mean that in an endearing term. But if you read anything that Ovid writes, it is the smuttiest smut of the universe, if you will. Like, it's really bad. I said something to my husband about reading or listening to on an audiobook, something that Ovid was writing. And then my husband, I thought I was trying to like, you know, culture my husband, like, this is something that you should learn about because it's something that I read like an antidote about, like, culture yourself, man, spiritually. And I'm going to tell you, he did. And I got in the car one day, we're going to the grocery store with the baby, right? And he starts playing this audiobook. And I was like, what is this smut? And he goes, this is the book that you told me to listen to by Ovid. And I was like, are you kidding me? It's a lot, my guys. Ovid, like I said, in the nicest, most concise way I can say it, he was a horny old goat and he was exiled from Rome because of it. Honestly, if you look up the history, it's interesting. But anyways, if you want to know just a quick change of what it is that Ovid retells versus Homer, in Ovid's retelling of the hymn, he says that Aphrodite instructs Eros to hit Hades with an arrow to make him fall in love with Persephone. So if we talk about podcast episode 189, where we talk about the primordial gods and chaos, Eros is actually a primordial god, but Ovid, because he's later in the Roman retellings of Greek mythology, Ovid retells him as the son of Aphrodite and Ares, which makes sense because if you think of Eros as the primordial god of love and passion and sex, basically, creation in a different way, it kind of makes sense to make him not necessarily a primordial god, but make him the offspring of Aphrodite and Ares, because Aphrodite is the goddess of love and Ares is the god of war. So to have something that Eros is known for, which is like passion, you would think that love and war can be very passionate. So I guess it makes sense with the line of thinking that Ovid was going through. It's just not the oldest of the old that we can find for the root understanding of where this story is derived. So, I mean, it makes sense, but it's not as true to form as it could be, which is, again, what we're trying to focus on here. So with all of that being said, let's get on to the story of the abduction of Persephone.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
So, as the story goes by my retelling, if you don't want to listen to my retelling of the story, or you want to listen to it in addition to reading the hymn itself on your own, that will be listed down in the show notes or the description below. So I found one source that actually is a retelling by some dude named Greg something. Well, it's not a retelling, it's a translation. So he translated the Greek hymn into what he has written on the website. So go feel free to read that on your own. But this is my retelling. One day, Persephone is out with her girl gang, right? And they're picking flowers. Specifically, that stuck out to me most was daffodils. So if you guys know anything about going outside in the springtime, what is the plant that starts popping up like daisies in the springtime? Daffodils. So I just think it's interesting to take note of the fact that when Persephone is kidnapped, she is out with her girl gang picking flowers, specifically daffodils. Then all of a sudden, as she's ripping flowers from the ground and doing girly things with her friends, literally Hades breaks through the ground underneath her and snatches her up like the daffodil she's picking and rides away in his golden chariot with her. And the only thing that is heard is her screams. So I don't understand how she has all these girls around her, of which I think one of them was Athena, and no one sees it, but no one does. And the only person or people that hear the screams of Persephone are her mother, Demeter, the goddess of the harvest, and Hecate. Hecate is said to be in her cave, jay chillin' as one does, as a Titan goddess, and hears the screams of Persephone. So Demeter, being Persephone's mom, races from wherever she is and is like, listen, I heard my child scream, where is she? And she adorns a dark cloak and starts asking all the gods and goddesses that she can find and mortals alike, hey, which one of you flatfoots has seen my daughter? And everyone's like, I don't know. And she's like, I don't believe you. You're not telling me the truth. So she has these two torches in her hands and she's asking gods and mortals alike, which one of you people took my daughter and who do you know did it? And no one says anything when Hecate comes to her and she has a torch in her hand and she says, hey, girl, I heard your daughter scream. Did I see it? No, but I'm here to tell you that you're not crazy. I did hear the scream of your daughter and I'm here to help you come find her. And Demeter's like, sick dog, let's go. And Hecate's like, wait. You said you asked people, right? And no one told you that they saw anything? And Demeter's like, heck no. Everyone, I feel like they're all a big bunch of yellow belly liars. And she's like, yeah, they probably are. So let's go to the god who sees everything under the sun, Helios himself. So Hecate and Demeter go up to Helios and they're like, yo, bro, from one god to a goddess, can you please tell me what the heck happened to my daughter? And Helios is like, sure, Demeter, I respect you a lot. Let me tell you what happened. It's no big whoop, dog. Your daughter was just stolen by Hades, the god of the underworld. But it's okay because he is going to marry your daughter, Persephone, because Zeus, her dad, said that it's okay. And Demeter's like, what? No one told me that Zeus said that Hades could marry my daughter, and my daughter didn't even know about it. That's really uncool. And Helios is like, no, girl, it's totally fine. You should be happy that the prince of the underworld or the king of the underworld is going to be the husband of your daughter. Like, you should be honored. This is great. It's awesome news. And Demeter's like, actually, it's not. Thanks for your help. Have a nice day. And she goes into hiding as a human among mortals. She specifically disguises herself as an old woman, and she just walks around Earth, slowly killing everything with her sadness. So because Demeter is the goddess of the harvest, she's directly tied with all of the seeds that the humans on Earth have sowed, and she's not letting a single thing grow. She's keeping the fruits from the trees, the wheat from growing and germinating, everything. And she's really upset about it. While she's wandering among the mortals, dressed or disguised as an old woman dressed in dark robes, she comes across three daughters. And these three daughters end up belonging to, like, a really cool king. I think he's the king of the Eleusians or Eleusians, something like that. And the three daughters are like, hey, old lady, you're pretty cool. Why are you sitting outside all sad in the sun? And she's like, listen. And she tells him this really interesting backstory, which obviously isn't true, about how she was captured by pirates and traveled the seas. And then one night when they were having a barbecue, she stole away from them and escaped her pirate captives. And then that's how she is where she is now. And she's all old and crony, if you will. And the girls are like, hey, our mom just had a son and she's only had daughters until now. And she prayed really, really hard for a son. And like, if you wanted to, I'm sure you could be a really good nanny for our little brother because our mom is stoked to have a son. And so is our dad. He's like this really cool, important guy in Eleusia. Pardon me. It's Eleusis. Eleusis is the town that the three daughters find the mortal figure of Demeter in. Eleusis. And it's their dad, who is like the king of Eleusis. So Demeter is like, cool, great. I just want to take care of babies, you know? And these women, these three girls, do not know that Demeter is who she is. She just looks like an old woman to them. So they ended up taking her home to their house, their palace. And their mom is like, who's this lady? And they're like, she had this really interesting, hard life. And she wants to take care of our little brother. And do you think that she would be a great nanny for him? And her mother's like, heck yeah, she would be great. That's awesome. You're hired. So Demeter gets straight to her new job of being the caregiver for the crown prince of Eleusis. And because she's a goddess, she doesn't have to nurse him or care for him in the same way as like a mortal woman would. Instead, she does really cool things. And one of those things is roasting him in a divine fire to give him qualities of an immortal. And then one night, because she's doing such a great job, everyone in the palace, the daughters, the mom, the dad, they see how their son is thriving. And Demeter's like, yeah, he's going to be really honest. He's going to be cool. He's going to be the bro schmo of all bro schmos. And he's going to be awesome for you guys. But one night, his mother comes in because she just really wants to see how well this woman is taking care of her son because she just is so excited about it. But she stumbles upon seeing Demeter roasting him in a divine fire. But she doesn't know it's a godly heavenly blaze. She just thinks that this old woman is literally roasty toastying her son. So she runs in and is like, what in the heck a doodle are you doing? And Demeter, you know, she's been through a lot. She lost her daughter. She's upset. Her sadness is therefore keeping all of the crops from growing in the human world. And she just wants to take care of another baby. She's trying to maybe fill the void of losing her daughter. And at this point, she snaps. She's like, listen, you don't know who you're messing with. And she's like, actually, I am the goddess Demeter, and you just messed with the wrong person. So this woman just unknowingly just comes in and is like, oh, man, I did not know that. I am so sorry. And Demeter's like, yeah, well, you should have thought about that first. You can't talk to me that way. Now there's going to be dishonor on you, dishonor on your family, dishonor on your cow, and wars if you don't get you and your butts and the butts of your kingdom to build me a temple where your daughters found me. Because if they don't, you're going to be really sore. So this woman's like, okay, I'm sorry. And they build a temple for Demeter to literally hide in and mope until Zeus catches wind of the fact that all of the mortals are making sacrifices to him. And they're like, hey, dude, our crops aren't growing. What gives? And he figures out through this that Demeter is hiding in a temple that she scared humans into making for her with her rage over her daughter being taken from her, that she is keeping the harvest for the mortals from growing. So in an attempt to appease her, he sends down the goddess of rainbows to try and petition her to come back to Olympus and stop her brooding. Because he's like, listen, I just basically said that our daughter could marry Hades. And, you know, as her dad, I'm allowed to say that. So you need to stop moping. It's not that big a deal. And Demeter's like, screw you. That's not happening. I'm staying here until you bring my daughter back to me. And Zeus is like, okay. And he just keeps trying to send other gods and goddesses to get Demeter out of her funk. And the whole time she's like, no, I'm not leaving my temple until you bring my daughter and I see her with my own eyes. And Zeus finally is like, okay, Hermes, dude, other god of the liminal spaces and helping people get from one transition and place to another, can you please go down to the underworld and get Persephone back? Because Demeter is just not having it. I know I sold our daughter. I know I basically just shipped off our daughter without her consent or Persephone's consent in order to be the bride of Hades. But, you know, the people are going to die. All the mortals are going to die because Demeter's really mad at this thing that I thought I had the ability and the say-so to do. So Hermes goes down into the underworld and is like, hey, Persephone, your mom is really upset that you're gone. And I know you probably want to see her too. So Zeus says that you should come back with me because Demeter needs to see you with her own eyes. And Persephone's like, yes, I've been waiting for someone to come get me. This place is so different. I don't really like, I was taken here without anyone asking, but I'm excited to leave. But then Hades, he comes in and he's like, hey girl, I know we're married and stuff. And you've been going through this whole onboarding process of like learning how to, you know, do my job and be the best part of me while I do this job that is mine. But you haven't eaten anything since you got here. You want to eat some of these pomegranate seeds? They're delicious. And she's like, sure, I'm parched. So she eats some pomegranate seeds. But if you do that, I guess you're not allowed to leave the underworld if you eat something or take something from the underworld, which no one really knew about except for Hades, because, you know, he's the only dude that works in that area of existence, non-existence, supernatural existence, whatever you want to call it. So then she goes back in the chariot with Hermes and talks to Zeus, and Zeus is like, gosh darn it. Well, since I'm the ruling god of the heavens and thunder, I'm going to decree that for 1/3 of the year, you're going to have to be within the realms of the dark mist underneath with your husband Hades. But for 2/3 of the year, you're going to be able to stay with your mother and in the mortal world. So that's what I decree to get over this little snafu of you eating some pomegranate seeds. So because of that, Hecate is given the responsibility to be Persephone's attendant queen and guide to and from the underworld every year. And that is the story of the abduction of Persephone by Hades, i.e. the Homeric hymn to Demeter. I hope you enjoyed my retelling of the story. If not, please go down to the show notes and read the translation that I read in order to dictate that lovely story to you all on your own. It's not too long of a read, but I would recommend it nonetheless. Now, you may be a little confused if you were listening closely to the schmack I was talking, that Zeus says to everybody, he decrees, that Persephone will be in the underworld with Hades for a third of the year, but then two-thirds of the year she's going to be with her mother and among mortals. But you might be asking, why is it one-third and two-thirds? Aren't there four seasons? There are, and I have the answer to that question because I was reading the fractions too, and I was like, this doesn't make sense. So for Hellenistic Greeks, you may ask why there are thirds and not fourths, and that is because although Greece has four seasons, they only had three horae, which are the goddesses that represent the seasons. Now, the names of the horae vary by source, but spring, summer, and fall only seem to be the seasons that need divine governance because the Hellenistic Greeks saw winter as a time of dormancy or hibernation, i.e., there wasn't a god or goddess that needed to have divine governance over that season because it was just a time for sleeping. So I thought that was interesting. They had four seasons, but only three horae. So you can go and look up the names of the horae if you'd like. Six, I think, or seven that I read. But again, depending on the source, because we're all talking about what is more core root beginning ideas of things, you can go figure that out on your own. We're talking more about Persephone and Hecate here. So let's talk about the insight, perspectives, and interpretations we may be able to draw from this story. One of the things I want to bring attention to, because I mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast, that there is like a more modern subset of spiritualists, mythology lovers, I guess, whatever you want to call them, that make a more direct interpretation of this story, which is, again, valid and necessary. But I would like to say that Greek mythology is not necessarily meant to be read literally. It's meant to be read with its allegory. Greek mythology is generally understood as a collective of symbolic stories that explain natural phenomena, i.e., in this scenario, it's this changing of the seasons when Persephone is in the underworld with Hades, everything is winter and fall. But when Persephone is in Olympus with her mother among mortals, then you have spring and summer. But these symbolic stories are to explain natural phenomena, human behaviors, and social structures rather than literal historic events or factual encounters of gods and goddesses. However, most scholars agree that Greek myths are meant to be interpreted symbolically, with the characters and events representing deeper concepts and moral lessons, which is what we're going to talk about. So I do want to say, too, that when we're talking about spirituality, right? Spirituality is your ability, in my opinion, if you will, and everyone has an opinion. They're kind of like buttholes. In my opinion, spirituality is supposed to help you heal and grow and move forward and be grounded, right, in reality. So the interpretation of information, whether it be religious, mythological, whatever you want to say the information that you're reading is, however it feels to you, it is supposed to help you move in that forward direction, right? And there's a lot of different ways in order to interpret and read and understand things within spirituality. But given that, just on the basis of there's a lot of people nowadays that interpret this story, or at least it seems like there are a lot of people nowadays that interpret this story literally, I totally understand. Because I would say, I talked about this a while ago, what the difference is between 27-year-old Olivia and, like, I think I was 21, 22 when we started Metapsychics, Olivia. 21, 22-year-old Olivia would definitely be more a part of the literal interpretation sister gang of the abduction of Persephone story, 100%, 100%. However, 27-year-old Olivia is now the person that would like to understand more of the historical significance of this story and how, based on when this story was written and how it would be interpreted then, it can now be interpreted now. I don't know. Does that make sense? I hope it does. So with that being said, in the 8th century BCE, when this hymn was written by Homer himself based on the Hesiod Theogony, it was very common for girls to be married without their consent, as most societies, including those in the Mediterranean region, practiced arranged marriages where the father had authority to decide who his daughter would marry, and consent from the bride was typically not required by law, as well as the consent of the mother. Not required. So, given that information, that during the 8th century BCE, when this hymn was written, this is what was practiced, culturally speaking, within society. So, I think that among the literal interpretation of that, yes, Persephone was abducted by Hades, and therefore nothing but badness could come from their relationship, if that's the way you're choosing to interpret this story, that does make sense. That's a very literal interpretation. But it's important to remember when the myth was written, and that spiritually, these things are meant to help ground people, to give them reasons to heal and to explain natural phenomena, human behaviors, and societal structures. So I think this story really just goes through a lot of things outside of that. The most well-known and interpreted of this story, the reason for the changing of the seasons, which we've already talked about. When Persephone is in the underworld with Hades, it's wintertime. When she is with her mother Demeter and in Olympus and in the mortal world, it is spring and summer. And, you know, when she's traveling down into the underworld with Hecate, that is the fall time, because Demeter's getting sad. So I want to talk about the quotes from this hymn itself, just because it lends validity or perspective to a couple different things that I think if you read the story itself, you can gather a lot more from than just hearing me talk about it. Again, I encourage you to go read a translation of this hymn directly on your own, because it's not that hard to read, I promise you. Not just listening to me, I don't think does it justice. I think everyone should go read it for themselves and see what you can gather. And then let me know what you think, if I miss anything that you see differently or interpret differently or perspective I might miss as I talk through this. Let me know in the comments below. I definitely want to hear what everyone gains from this story, because what I gain from it may not be what you do. And I'm very excited to listen to everyone else's perspectives and insights and wisdom that they gather from the story. But we're going to start first with some of the quotes from the hymn itself, because again, it lends validity or insight to different perspectives and then the more literal perspectives as well. So one of the quotes from the hymn I find really interesting, not just because it was written twice, but that is something that made it stand out to me, was the eldest daughter of the three daughters and the mother of the daughters and the son that Demeter ends up caring for a little bit, both say to Demeter in disguise, because they don't know who she is. They just see her as an old woman. They say to her, quote, "Old mother, we humans endure the gifts that gods give us, even when we are grieving what has to be." And that just kind of, not only did that quote strike me personally, because I feel like it can be very applicable to things going on in my life now, past, present, future. Like, that's just a very good quote, I think, to sit back and mentally think about, chew on, mull over, whatever you want, in order to sort of give you some perspective about whatever it is that's going on in your life right now or what might be. I don't know, it just helped me. But I also think that it's interesting because a human said that to a goddess, right? This goddess, this woman, lost her child because the husband, or the father of her child, I should say, literally just gave consent without her for her daughter to be married to her uncle. Which again, in 8th century BC was customary. However, that doesn't mean that mothers and daughters weren't hurt by the actions of fathers. And I think it's very interesting for a human to tell a goddess that we humans endure the gifts the gods give us, even when we are grieving what has to be. So they're like, listen, you can still accept the gifts that are being given to you, even though you're grieving what is already happening. So she's grieving over the loss of her daughter, right? Persephone, just snatched from her while she's literally picking daffodils and taken to the underworld. And no one wants to tell her anything, and she has to go to the sun god to get it out of him because no one's going to speak against Zeus, right? And Hecate is like, screw you, I'm a Titan goddess, I'll help you. Zeus loves me, he can't talk down to me. And she's there asking these three daughters, can I be a nanny for your brother? Because I feel like even if your child is gone, you can't, you still have that maternal instinct. You still have that want, that need, that desire to take care of babies. And she's like, maybe in my sadness and in my solitude and in my anguish, I can give the love that I cannot give to my daughter to someone else. But that still doesn't take away from the fact that you're pissed. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's very interesting how Homer took that perspective and was like, I'm going to make a human say this to the goddess, and it could still be applicable to her. I don't know. We talked about humility in my life update, right? I feel like that is one of the most humbling things that a human could say to a goddess. Maybe that's one of the reasons she got even madder when the son of the Eleusis's king's mother came in and was like, why are you roasting my child? Maybe she held a little bit of anger from that. Because again, the mother said this same quote to Demeter as well. Like, you should kind of be cool with the gifts that you have, even though you're angry about what's happening. So I wanted to share that with you all because I was like, whoa. Interesting. Now, the second quote that I have is just specifically from Zeus. This was his declaration of, you know, the parts in which Persephone was to be said to be with Hades versus with her mom. And Zeus says, quote, "But when the earth starts blossoming with fragrant flowers of springtime, flowers of every sort, then it is that you must come up from the misty realms of darkness." So, this, again, is the quote that you could literally translate into understanding, like, okay, when it's springtime, that's when Persephone's back with her mom. And she's there with her mom until wintertime. Hence the reason for the seasons. Now, the last quote I want to talk about, and this, again, because we're talking about literal versus symbolic or allegory interpretations, this last one is we're getting into more interpretations than literal things. So this last quote was from Persephone herself when she's finally reunited with her mom. And she says, I'm going to tell you all the truth of what happened. And Persephone says, quote, "He took me away under the earth in his golden chariot. It was very much against my will." Which is a very direct, and you can interpret that literal translation. Now, the thing I want to talk about with this quote here was, while conducting my research, I heard different people, different sources mention that Hades was not always a person or a god, but a place. And I was like, okay, well, if Hades is a place, then maybe there is a room to interpret that Persephone doesn't necessarily go to the underworld to be, or like, that a man stole her, quote unquote, a person. But maybe it's more so that she went into like a depression type of thing. Because when we think about the underworld, you think about something scary, you think about something dark, some place that people don't want to go, like no one ever comes back from it type of thing. So it's like, maybe this is a way to interpret the story of depression and use it as a way, not necessarily of the cycle of the seasons or feminism, but more so a descent into depression and being able to come out of it. However, I would like to say that even though you can use this story perhaps to help find solace and perspective, wisdom, insight into a descent of depression, which I'm sure everyone goes through. I'll just leave it at that. But I wanted to talk about how Hades, according to my light general research, has always been a person and not a place. Because the way people talked about it in my research through like videos and stuff like that, they because everyone's trying to interpret this story in their own way, right? And some people were like, well, Hades wasn't even a person. He was a place before he was a person. And I was like, so then is Persephone even being stolen by like a dude? Like, how does this go into to more things? So I was able to find the following. A Hades backstory, if you will. So with a general Google search of, quote, when did Hades turn into a person and not a place in Greek mythology? The answers that I found was that Hades, as many of you probably already know, is the son of the Titans and Titaness Kronos and Rhea or Rhea. And he has the brothers Zeus and Poseidon. However, in Homeric and Ionic Greek, he was referred to as Adonis or Hades, and during the classical period, he was solidified his name as Hades. So again, he was called Adonis or Hades, but during the classical Greek period, his name was solidified in the written language as Hades, as we see it today. However, I believe it was in the Theogony, and quote, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I just believe from what I'm remembering that I read, it was in the Hesiod Theogony that literally when Zeus took the Titans and imprisoned them in Tartarus, it was Poseidon, Zeus, and Hades, and they drew straws, and Hades literally drew the short straw, and that is why he became the god over the dominion of the underworld, because he literally grabbed the short straw. However, because that brings validity into the fact that he was a god before he was a place, not the other way around, because that's what I was starting to feel in my research that people were alluding to, that he was not a place, he wasn't a god, he was a place first. However, I believe he was a god first and then a place, because in Christian denominations, Hades is sometimes used to refer to the state of, quote, a departed spirit. And the Jewish adaptation, please correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's Sheol or Soul, described in the book of Job, is the farthest place possible in heaven where the dead go regardless of who they were in their earthly life. So Hades, I believe, has always been a person, and then it wasn't until like the Christian and Jewish sort of denominations or ideas came in that he may have been confused with being a place first and not a person. But I do believe that he was a person first, not a place. Final answer, just because he drew the short stick. Now, if you have other information to contest that argument, please let me know. I would love to actually know what came first, Hades the person or Hades the place. But I do think it was Hades the god, the person, the dude, if you will. Hence why Homer wrote Persephone saying, he took me away under the earth in his golden chariot. It was very much against my will. He says he. So anyways. Now, I do want to say that moving on to this idea of if you believe Hades was a place before they were a person, because again, it's spirituality. This is all up to interpretation. There is no right or wrong. It's more just like what it is that you grab from this story that helps you heal. You could say that Hades can be a euphemism for depression because it's a place that scares us. Hades is a person or place that scares us, depending on what you're talking about. Because even during this time, during the Hellenistic era, the Greeks themselves used to refer to Hades as Pluton. Hence, the association later down in time when you had like characteristics similar to the Roman god Pluto. But the Greeks used to refer to Hades as Pluton, which means wealthy, because they were too scared to say his name. Just because he was the god of the underworld. But I mean, that makes sense, though, because everyone's scared of death. Nobody wants to go to the underworld. No one wants to go into the different places of the Greek underworld, if that's what they believe. So they would refer to him as Pluton instead of Hades. So again, depression, though, too, is scary. It's a place that is very full of uncertainties and just nothingness. So I feel like in this story, you could use it, Hades, as a way to understand that depression can end and that there are different ways to overcome it or interpret it. Anyways, I've been thinking about doing an episode on depression. I think that's just why I'm talking about it a little bit, because it has things that I could talk about. personally. Anyways, moving on. We have the trials and tribulations of a mother and daughter and Hades. Exactly. people might not like my talking about the perceptions that you could draw from Hades, but that's okay. You don't have to like everything. I'm just trying to give as much 3D analysis of this story that I possibly can, because I feel like the story is very much generated towards women, but I also feel like it could be generated towards men as well, which is why I'm going to talk about Hades as well. So the ways you can interpret the trials and tribulations of a mother and a daughter and Hades through this hymn. First thing that I wrote down, and again, let me know if you gather anything else from this story, whether you listened to my retelling of it or you read a translation on your own, is letting go of your child. Dude, my son is only a year, just shy of a year and a half, and I don't say that I dread letting him go once he becomes like an adult and decides to move out, marry, have children, get a job, whatever it is that he's doing. Like, even just the thought of him driving a car on his own, I guess, makes me nervous. I just wrote about this on Patreon in a life update where I sometimes catch myself emotionally struggling with the idea and the action of my son existing outside of the safety of my arms. And I think this is something that you can really think about in this story of Persephone was grown up, and you can contest grown up all you want. In 8th century BC, the ages of 12 to 14 was usually the age that a father would give consent to a man who was in his 20s or older to marry his 12 to 14 year old daughter. So I'm just saying of age in the times, given that she's a goddess of mythology, that letting your child go and move to a different place is something that I don't think any parent is ever ready for. I don't know. I read all those memes of like, oh, your kid is, you know, you have to take care of them until you're 18 or until they're 18 and you're going to be so excited just to get him out of your house. But I don't think I'll ever feel that way, at least not about my son. I love him. So I think when that time comes, it's going to be a very much like bite your tongue sort of situation, and have some respect for yourself and your baby and let them go. But that is really, really, really freaking hard. Now, arranged marriages had to be hard for a mom and a daughter. Yes, I know Homer was a man and he wrote this poem. However, that's not to say that he didn't hear and wasn't privy to all of the anguish and sadness that arranged marriages by fathers caused mothers and daughters. I'm sure he heard a lot of mothers talking about how they didn't agree with the match that their husband gave their daughter as a husband. Like, I'm sure there was a lot of people that were very angry. There was a lot of mothers that he heard talking and a lot of daughters that he also heard talking. Maybe Homer had his own children and I don't know. I don't know that much about him, but I'm just saying that just because he's a man and he wrote it doesn't mean that he doesn't or wasn't privy to the anguish that arranged marriages could cause during that time. And this story definitely talks about it. Like, Demeter literally was so sad that she wasn't going to let any of the harvest come for the humans at all. She was so angry that she lashed out at a woman that she was so excited to care for her son for, that she told them that she was going to curse them basically if they didn't build her a place for her to stew in. Could you imagine being so angry that you are so lost that you go to someone and say, "Can I care for your child?" Basically because I'm heartbroken. And they're like, "Sure, we would love for you to take care of our child." And then they critique you on one thing, even though you're just doing the best that you can. And then you get so angry that you're like, if you don't build me a place that I can hide in, there's going to be a lot of problems for you. And they're like, "Sure, let me build you this house to stay in while you're sad." Like, that's a lot. And we don't necessarily get Persephone's side of the story. If I missed a Hellenistic story where they talk about Persephone's experience in the underworld, please let me know where I can read that down below. I'm sure there's a lot of fan fictions, but I'm just trying to, like, you know, get to the root history of it, if you will. Let me know in the comments below. Another thing though too is that no one will ever be good enough for your children. Helios tells Demeter, yes, Hades took your daughter, but that's only because her father Zeus said that he could. And you should be happy about it because he's, you know, the god of a dominion. He's the dude of the underworld. And it's not that bad for your daughter to marry someone that's so cool. And Demeter's like, heck no. Don't even talk that rubbish to me. Are you kidding me? Nobody will ever be good for your children. When I told my mom that I was going to marry my current husband, she was not happy about it. I'm not going to lie. She's like, you can find someone so much better than a mechanic. But, you know, love sometimes isn't about that. And in this situation, it was an arranged marriage. And it doesn't matter who the person is, status-wise or anything else. I don't think that a mother will ever think that the person they're with is the best. I mean, hopefully I will be able to overcome that thought when I'm older. But at this point in time, I'm like, I don't know. I just love my kid. So, I mean, even in healthy relationships, I'm sure there's still that little bit of like, is the person that my baby is marrying, are they going to be able to take care of them in the ways that I wish that I could take care of my child if they ever need me type of thing? You know what I'm saying? No one's ever good enough. Another way to interpret this story is that a mother will probably always still want to care for babies, like a mom's instinct, perhaps, because even in her sadness, Demeter's like, can I take care of your son? Can I take care of a baby? I don't look very cool. I look like this old woman and I had this hard life, but will you entrust me to the care of your child? Because you're just, I don't know. Isn't that why we have grandbabies? or midlife crises when you're older and you just buy another dog, you just want to care for someone. So I feel like that can be something that you glean from the story as well. Something that one of my friends told me, which I thought was a very interesting take on this interpretation of a story, was the impact in unknown places that Persephone or the child can have. So like we talk about how no one will ever be good enough for your child, right? Like you just don't care. It doesn't matter where they go in life. You just always think that they're the best of the best, right? And they deserve the best. Well, in this situation, Persephone ended up ruling over the underworld with Hades, right? She became the goddess of the underworld, even though she was the goddess of like springtime and beauty and things like that. So there are regions of the underworld that I found from a quick Google search. These regions include the Asphodel Meadows or Fields, which are the neutral sort of quote unquote content place in which souls just go for the rest of eternity. I guess you could say it's like heaven, but they really express the fact that these fields or meadows, the Asphodel Meadows, are just very neutral. Nothing to really write home about, no pun intended. The second place of the underworld or region of the underworld is Tartarus, which is the deepest part of the underworld. And yes, Tartarus is also a primordial god or being that came from chaos, but Tartarus is also a place, i.e. the place where Zeus imprisoned the Titans. Now we also have the region of Elysium, which is like the paradise, the creme de la creme place where heroes and those who gods granted immortality go to. And then you also have the Styx, which is the river Styx. And that is the body of ethereal, I guess ethereal is not the right word, underworld water, where souls travel to go to either the meadows, Tartarus, or Elysium. So that is just like the mode of transportation in which the souls use to get to one of the three regions of the underworld. Now, the reason I bring these things up is because the impact that someone can have in the world, right? Going through transitions, places, changes, right? You don't know how positive that could be. So if Hades is in the underworld all by himself, because he literally drew the short stick to have dominion over that realm, the positive impact Persephone could be as the wife of Hades for the souls of the underworld is unimaginable. So that's something that my friend brought up. They're like, listen, the positive impact that Persephone could have walking with the souls in the Asphodel Meadows or going to Elysium is ridiculous. It's like something that so many people sort of overlook. And even though she or her mother, Demeter, may have thought that her importance in Olympus or on the mortal world would benefit everyone better, it could be argued that her place within the underworld with Hades as his wife is also immeasurably beneficial to the souls that she has dominion down under there for a third of the year. So, especially given the fact, this is the another thing that someone brought up to me as well. And this may be a little morbid, but it's also something that I've noticed just in my own life. But looking it up, on average, January is the month that most people die in, with February and March coming in second and third, and December as ranking fourth. Those are some of the months in which Persephone, according to the mythology, goes down into the underworld. So could you imagine how much, mythologically speaking, theoretically speaking, her presence as a goddess of like beauty and the lovely things could benefit the souls that are entering into the underworld? If you pass away, wouldn't you want to be greeted by Persephone? So that's just another thing I sort of had the perspective given to me by someone else that you could glean from this story. Another one that I'm sure some people may not really like, but again, we still do live in a world where there are arranged marriages. And yes, in the West, where we all think arranged marriages are horrible and terrible, there are parts of the world that still embrace arranged marriages. And the outcome of arranged marriages is very, very good and very positive and very lovely and beneficial. And I'm not saying I know everything, because I don't. I'm a white girl from America. But I do really like watching Indian Matchmaker, at least when I had Hulu. And there was a lot of arranged marriages, though, from like the parents of the people from the Matchmaker that I was watching that had really, really happy and loving relationships. Now, in this situation, this is an arranged marriage. So to just put our Western influence on it and be like, all arranged marriages are bad and nothing but heartache and destruction and sorrow and sadness can come from them, that's not always the case. So I do think that you could say that Persephone and Hades did have a loving relationship. She brought the light and the beauty within the darkness that he had dominion over. Again, he pulled the short stick, not to just like only say nice things about Hades, but I don't really know, I don't have knowledge to infringe upon the fact that he did anything bad necessarily there, given the fact that the story was written in the 8th century and he had permission to steal Persephone, quote unquote. Not to say that he couldn't have gone about it in the other way, but also would that make a good story for Homer to write about if Hades came down on one knee and was like, I was given consent by your father to marry you, but do I have your consent? No, that would make a modern rom-com, guys. So it doesn't evoke the feelings that get the people going, you know? So I do think that they have the ability to find love and mutual respect. And even in non-arranged marriages, specifically using my own, love is something that you have to work for. Is it there, and is it the reason that I married my husband? Yes, a lot of things are the reason that I married my husband that I think all boil down to the word and the feeling and the conception or idea of love. However, love is not just a word, it's an action. So it's something that you always have to work for. And I do think that it's something that even outside of arranged marriages is something that waxes and wanes like the moon, and it's not something that just stays forever. It's not a constant. It's hard work. So, the pomegranate. Why does Hades try to be cunning? There was a word. I forget what it was. I don't know if it was bay or bale. There was a word, if you read the source that I have listed in the description below for the translation of the hymn into English, that specifically, when you look it up, translated from Greek into English can mean one of two things. And it was used to describe how Hades gave or got Persephone to eat the pomegranate. And it was through this word that starts with a B. And when you translate the word, it either means by force or through cunning. So again, however you want to interpret that word, you can interpret it by saying he forced her to eat the pomegranate, or you could say that he was cunning and he tricked or deceived her into eating the pomegranate. I'm not saying that being cunning or being tricky is right. I'm just saying that if you are the god of the underworld where you are processing the souls into eternity by yourself, all alone, with no one else, you might want some companionship and you might want something that's beautiful in what they call the dark, misty realms. So you probably want to talk to someone that's alive or someone that is of your own sort of godliness. So I don't think that it's, I think it's normal human nature. Again, going back to the fact that Greek mythology is not supposed to be taken literally, but generally understood to be a collection of symbolic stories to help people understand human behaviors and societal structures, that the human behavior of, if you have something so beautiful and lovely that you felt that you needed to keep your intent or intention of marrying from the world because you're like, I feel like I'll never get this chance again, I have to be secretive or deceitful about it, that you do the same thing. You don't want to lose that beauty. Hades was like, I finally have something that I feel like I've been needing for so long. I don't want it to just be taken away from me. Yes, Demeter is valid in her feelings. Yes, Persephone is valid in her feelings. But Hades also has validity in his feelings. Am I saying that they're right to be cunning and deceitful? Heck no. However, you can still understand how perhaps he may have been feeling when he finally had this beautiful, beautiful person to stand by his side and rule dominion over, being almost taken away from him. If that was you, would you just be like, yeah, baby, you'll come back to me? No. I mean, if he was that suave, then maybe, but I don't know if that's necessarily Hades' character. Because at the end of the day, you could be a god if you want, but you're still a man. That's my interpretation. The last thing is that nothing lasts forever and that balance is key. Change is brought and can be found within the seasons. And there is this overarching give and take of how balance can be found. You know, she's only in the underworld for a third of the year during the winter. And then the rest of the seasons, she's up and about. So you can never, even if you're, however you want to relate this story to your life or take wisdom, insight, perspective, whatever it is that you find from it, it's always going to change, though. Whatever this story can help you get through or move on or move past or find solace in, it's always going to change, though. Like, what you might be dealing with right now is going to change, just like the seasons do. She's not always going to be in the underworld. She's going to be above ground and doing beautiful spring, summer things with her mom. Just like whatever it is that you may be going through isn't always going to be dark and feel like you're being taken away against your will or held somewhere where you don't find any light, you will resurface and you will blossom with the rest of the daffodils, just like Persephone. And the reason we brought this story up in the first place was because of the Titaness Hecate, who helps Persephone on her journey, as well as Demeter in finding her daughter. So Hecate comes up. She's like, hey, Demeter, I heard your daughter scream. I don't know what happened, but we're going to figure it out. She hands Demeter a torch or lights one of her own. I just think that's really cute because Hecate is seen as someone who has torches in her art and iconography, if you will, if that's the right word to use. It might be wrong. And when I was reading this story and I got to the part where Hecate grabs a torch and joins Demeter, I just think that's cute because you have the phrase, what is it, holding a torch for someone, which means that you are affectionate for them, you love them, whether that be most of the things that I saw was like romantically, but I've always used carrying a torch for someone in a less romantic way of more like have faith in someone and you find them to be a good person despite what other people say about them. You hold a torch for them regardless of what others think. And that's kind of how I've always used that. But when I looked up the definition specifically, it was more like a romantic thing. But love, nonetheless, is still in the definition or understanding of the phrase to hold a torch for someone. And I was like, that's adorable. Maybe that's where we got that phrase from, was from Hecate, because she's like, I'll hold a torch for you, girl. Let's go find your daughter. And then this whole story is about transitions, right? And that's what Hecate deals with. She deals with the liminal space, the transition of Demeter letting her daughter go, that transition of you'll still be a mother, but your babies have to go. They have to grow up. They have to go out and move on your own. Hecate was there for Demeter through that. Now, when Persephone has to move about the underworld, the liminal space, if you will, Hecate is the one that sees her through into the darkness and back out into the light of spring, which really goes through all the seasons anyways.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
And then the last thing I did want to talk about, though, that I mentioned in last week's podcast about Hecate was that the epithets, right, which are the personas or personification of specific qualities or traits of that god or goddess, are the epithets, right? And I found an entire list of the epithets for Hecate. And I know in the last podcast about Hecate, I talked about how one of her epithets is Kore. And Kore specifically from, I believe it was the video with Phil the Blythe, she talks about how Kore is the childlike epithet of Hecate, who is the playmate for Persephone. However, the only information I could find was that Persephone's name before she was Persephone was Kore. So before she married Hades and was like taken from flower picking and made his wife, she was referred to as Kore, which in Greek means maiden. However, there's a giant list that I found on the internet of all of Hecate's epithets, and one of them is listed as Kore. And this information was compiled from the Greek magical papyri and other Hellenistic old books and information, right? Sources. But I couldn't find what Phil the Blythe was talking about specifically where Kore was Hecate and Hecate is Kore. I only found information where Kore is Persephone. So regardless of that, I just wanted to touch on that before we ended today's podcast. I hope you all liked the things I had to talk about. And if you didn't, that's okay too. We're not here to always just like enjoy or agree with everyone's perspectives. I think sharing perspectives and listening to others' perspectives, regardless of if you agree with them or not, always adds values to your opinions and helps shape and mold your ideas anyways, regardless of the fact of if you agree with someone. Because I feel like if you're just in an echo chamber of your own ideas and your own beliefs with no one else to sort of give you different things and ways to look at stuff, then you're just going to be in the same line of thinking. So I hope today's podcast was able to give you things to help shape your own spirituality and move you in a positive, new, lovely light and direction. And God, am I so excited for spring. It's the end of January, guys, and we just went through a couple weeks of super, super cold weather, and I am dreaming of spring. So with that, I am excited for Persephone to eventually return from the underworld. And I will be thinking of her when I see the daffodil soon. Thank you all so much for listening. If you're interested in a reading, I do have availability opening up every day because my website booking software just generates new days every day. So if you're interested in a reading, please go down to the show notes and click over to our website. If not, that's okay too. I appreciate your support and I hope you have a lovely rest of your Sunday. Peace.